This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 5. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, it's all changed for me from this time last week. The temperature is about 25 degrees less, but I'm very glad to be back in the UK. Welcome to the show, Garris. Welcome to the show, Berners.
Welcome back, fella. Hope you had a good trip.
Yes, it was excellent. A minor delay in Singapore, but nothing too much to worry about. And back from my trip to Sydney to film with Michael Bevan and Nathan Bracken. So keep your eyes peeled for the results of that coming up.
Oh, very good, mate. I'm sure you picked up some absolute gems from those guys.
Oh, it was fantastic. Nathan was superb. We managed to film in the pavilion at the SCG, and we got some great shots of Nathan doing his thing there. So that'll be great to see when that comes out. And he can really chat. You know, he can say a thing or two. He's very savvy and very confident in front of the camera. So going to have some exciting coaching tips.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, the way that he went, particularly in one day cricket, and the way he evolved as a bowler will be, you know, something that I'm sure a lot of the listeners and a lot of the Pitch Vision fraternity will love to pick up on and use within their own games.
Yeah, he's got a great story. Well, what have you been up to, Berners?
Lots of bits and pieces. We've got some interesting projects pending with Pitch Vision. So something very exciting in central London, which is a little secret at the moment, but it's going to launch fairly shortly. So there'll be more on that. And we've got a couple of systems going out to South Africa. And it's about it at the moment, but it's all good. Yeah, it's pre-season in the UK. So a couple of the counties starting to get on Pitch Vision and put a few bowlers through some pre-season testing. Good for, you know, using strategically week upon week if you're looking at certain dynamics of a bowler, pace, or looking at clusters of line and length and looking at how you can squeeze them out as we get closer. So all good.
Yeah, it's interesting as well to see how much data is coming into the Pitch Vision Interactive part of the website as well. I mean, that's as more and more systems go out there, the amount of deliveries that are coming through the system now is enormous. Every day we get an update with thousands of new deliveries on it.
Yeah, so yeah, all from all continents as well, which is nice. So we're bringing the global game together there, which is a nice neutral playground for all of you cricket boffs to get on a system near you and join that community.
Yeah, exactly. And then even if you're not near a system, one of the great advantages of it is you can go and drill down, look in the data, and see what's going on. So see what people are doing who are similar to you in, you know, if you're in India, similar to you in England and Australia, or, you know, wherever you are. I know most of our listeners are outside of the UK, in India and Australia and South Africa, all over the world. Lots of people listen to this and want to compare themselves to others and see where they rate. And you can see that on the Pitch Vision Interactive page, which is just over at pitchvision.com/interactive. That's right, isn't it, Berners?
It is.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about women's cricket. There is a World Cup going on at the moment, and it's an exciting time for women's cricket. And there's been talk of certain players joining in men's cricket, and other players saying that the women's game is a standalone game in itself, and women don't need to compare themselves to men. So it's all been quite interesting talk around this World Cup. What do you think of what's been happening in the Women's World Cup, Garris?
Oh, it's been good so far. And I think the difference between this World Cup and previous ones is that there's been a couple of anomaly sort of games that have come along where sides that you wouldn't expect to win have actually actually beaten some of the favoured sides, and we saw that with England losing their first match to Sri Lanka, which was something that you wouldn't have expected previously. But Sri Lankan cricket's coming on in the women's game. The West Indies have played a huge amount of cricket over the last couple of years, and it's no surprise to see them beginning to exert their own success in these big tournaments, and they're a well fancied side now, which is fantastic. The Big Four are probably still the Big Four, but I think there's six teams now at least that are being competitive, which is only good for a World Cup, really, which has been different to the things that we've seen in the past. So no, it's coming on really well, and I'm actually flying out on Friday to go and watch some of the games, so I'm looking forward to it.
And it is definitely a different game. It's not men's cricket light, is it? There's definitely a different style to it.
Definitely, and I think in the same way as watching a women's game of tennis has different skills and different things. And personally, I prefer watching women's tennis to the men's game. I find it a far more entertaining game to watch. And I think as the women's game in cricket has grown, there are nuances involved in it which are becoming highly skilled and a little bit different from watching, say, a 20-20 match or a 50-over match with the men, where it can be very power-based for a lot of the time. These girls can hit it miles, and we've seen some big sixes, but also you've seen some real deft touches, which often can be missed in men's cricket. So I love watching the women's game, and certainly I've been a big fan of it over the last 4 or 5 years as I've seen people develop in their professionalism, but also keep the game as a women's game rather than trying to make it into the same as a men's game, because it really benefits as a spectacle because of that.
And that's a challenge for a coach as well, isn't it? If you're in charge of a women's cricket team, it presents a slightly different coaching challenge.
Absolutely, and I know quite a few other guys, including Mark Lane, who's doing a fantastic job with England now. And it takes a while, I think, to adapt into the women's game and getting used to how it works. And it's not a simple case of just cut and pasting on what we know from men's game. And certainly the most successful coaches have been the ones that have taken a little bit of time, have listened to the players that are around them, have watched the game intently and really noticed that the different changes and the nuances which they have to get good at understanding themselves. And those people like John Harmer, who made a huge change in the English game, who's an Australian who came over and coached the England cricket team. Paul Farbrace, who did a brilliant job with England team again. And now Mark Lane have all taken their time to work it out and then apply their skills within the women's game rather than cutting and pasting the men's game on top of it.
Got bowled out by a girl once in high school. Fancied her for 3 years and then she bowled me out. Awful. My life was in disarray for about 6 months. Hannah Casper, she's called Hannah Casper.
Well, if you're listening, Hannah.
I'm going to have another go.
Are we talking romantically or bowling?
Either. Desperate on both counts.
Okay, it's time to wrap up our little introduction with the yes-no round. Three questions asked by Burners that myself and Garrus can only answer yes or no, even if we want to answer in more detail. So, Burners, what are the three questions you got this week?
First question, the coaching manual is dead.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, you can control how naturally you play.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, young cricketers benefit from small games more than practice.
Yes.
No.
I thought we were going to have a full house there.
No, mate. No, don't be so silly. We won't have one of those. Well, we've had a couple, haven't we? But it's good to have difference of an opinion every now and again.
It's time now for the questions round, and I'm going to admit something. I'm suffering terribly from jet lag, so I'm not sure how good my answers are going to be this week. So, Garrus, I'm going to put all the effort onto you this week to come up with your normal excellent answers. I'm sure it's going to be no more of a challenge than normal for you, but we have two questions sent in by readers, and of course the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. and Burners, you've got the two questions vying for that prize this week. What's the first one?
I do indeed. First question is in from Raghav. His club lacks a good outfield and has rough grass. As a result of this, they're not able to practice important skills like sliding, boundary stopping, diving, and just generally throwing themselves around, as most of them live in fear. So they're just limited in a training capacity to catching and throwing during practice most of the time. And they're just asking, are there any alternatives of kind of practicing these skills, any indoor sessions, for example, to help build up technique and take that into the live game? So I'm sure Gareth has got some ideas working with those youngsters down at Millfield.
Yeah, but not just through working there, but working in many different environments. And it's something that I've come across even at the top level. I'll be brutally honest with you. We've turned up at practice grounds for England, sometimes in the West Indies, sometimes in India, where you haven't got that pristine grass that people would feel comfortable diving on. But we still want to get some diving practice in. And two ways you can do it. If you're indoors, obviously, you've got the option of a crash mat. And most indoor leisure centres have got those. And what we generally do with those crash mats is we always have, and I've always got, some talcum powder, a tin of talcum powder in my kit bag. And I use that to put that on top of the crash mats. And that just allows somebody to slide without worrying about getting any friction. Because sometimes even a crash mat can cause friction, which is the thing that gives us grazes and bruises and just makes us stop on the surface for a bit longer. So if you flick over load of talcum powder, people can slide and the talcum powder allows it to move next to your skin or next to your clothing, and then you can keep sliding off. So doing exactly the same as you would do if you were outdoors. If you had the best outfield in the world, you can do that indoors, which is fantastic. The other thing is using covers, and most cricket grounds have got the sheet covers, the canvas covers. If you stick water on top of that and hose pipe on top of that, then again that acts as the same thing. It takes away the friction or the rough surface, and you go on a nice smooth surface and you can slide for miles on that. Obviously you've got to be aware of not having spikes on when you're on those canvases or those tarpaulins that have been doused down with water, but it's a fantastic practice and a great fun practice as well. So if you get a really wet weather, if you look like you're going to get rained off from having a cricket practice, get hold of a bit of a tarpaulin, use the rain to your advantage, and then you can have a fielding practice outside. So to me, if it rains, you've got two options. You either do some tactical work inside, or you get out and you get dirty and wet and you get on the tarpaulins and practice your slides. And don't just practice the slides where you're stopping something from going through the outfield. Also practice the ones that you're stopping balls from going to the boundary, or you're chasing the ball down and doing Andrew Simons where you dive flat on your front and flick the ball behind you. There's lots of different dives that you can incorporate. Fielding in pairs, where one person comes and slides and flicks a ball to somebody else who's running from the other side. There's loads of things you can do. So irrespective of the outfield quality that you have, hopefully by using a couple of those tips, which could be a crash mat and some talc or a tarpaulin or a canvas sheet and some water, use the opportunity that you can and do some fantastic diving work.
Or you sink a few ciders and you turn that into a bum sliding competition.
Mate, we've all done it, haven't we? You know, as soon as a game gets called off, and we've done it at an international level. I've seen Paul Collingwood go about 30 yards across a cover in an international game. We all do it with a bit of fun, but actually you can do that within a practical sense as well.
I'll tell you the one you've got to be careful of, Gareth. It's an occupational hazard of mine. It's that peg that the groundsman has left about 3 inches rearing out of the ground when you're mid-bum slide, and you might need to take a little detour or, you know, shank the brakes on. Either way,
it's not an easy one to do at pace, mate. That is it.
Can't believe we're discussing bum slide technique. I was going to ask that, Gareth. When you get to a venue or you play at your home venue is very poor quality outfield. Do you take a decision on how much diving you're actually going to be doing during the game?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also sometimes not the quality of the grass, but it's the quality of the subsurface underneath. And you may remember a game in Antigua, which was actually called off after a couple of overs between England and the West Indies, where the outfield was really sandy. And we took the decision, and obviously we didn't get to test it because the game got called off because nobody could run in. But we took the decision on that day, or when we were at the ground, that actually nobody would dive, because obviously it was fresh in our memories, the Simon Jones incident out in Australia in 2002. Mm. And we didn't want to lose anybody and basically put their career at risk because of, injury. So absolutely right. You know, you have to take a sensible approach on on this sort of stuff, and particularly those sand-based grounds that you do get in Australia sometimes, that you do get in the West Indies, just be really wary of it and take a team decision. Have a really robust discussion about it. And, you know, there's no point in losing somebody to injury or potentially a career-threatening injury if you can manage yourself. So, yeah, that's a good conversation to have and something to take into consideration.
Yeah, especially as if they club plays half their games on a rough outfield, then maybe the sliding practice goes down the priorities anyway.
Absolutely, and you just work at the things that you know will go well for you. But it is nice to have that option if you do get somewhere where you can slide, to use it properly. The other thing that I think is really important is if you get on a dewy outfield or you do get a bit of a downpour and the outfield is good, obviously that water on the top surface takes away the friction as well. So bear that in mind too. And I remember a game that we played under floodlights at Durham where it absolutely peeled it down with rain. It was when Ricky Ponting was playing at Somerset with us. Mm-hmm. And we took the decision when we went back out for rain to really use the wet conditions to our advantage to slide. And some of the fielding that we put on in that sort of 15-over period got straight back into the game. And as a result, we won the game easily. But it gave a fresh momentum, a momentum to what we were trying to achieve. And also, it was great fun. And all of a sudden, we were back in the game and ended up winning it at Canter.
Next question is in from Dean. He's 21. He's been a leg spinner for about 12 years. And he struggles to achieve any pace with his bowling. He says that he can generate lots of turn, and that's something that he's always made a priority. But without some natural pace, he finds it really difficult at a higher level. He's been told that doing some Pilates could well help. So you've got a floaty leg spinner by the sound of things.
Yeah, that's a common one, isn't it, Gareth, in that a spinner will often be said he's not bowling with enough pace, or he's not bowling with a professional pace, if you like.
Yeah.
What can
you
say to those type of bowlers?
Well, I think the first one is to have a look at pace. And the late, great Terry Jenner would always used to say to myself and guys who knew a lot more about leg spin than myself, but the pace that you get your maximum break off of the ball is your pace. So for Shane Warne, his pace, if you talk to the Ian Healy's of this world, would have been around 50 miles an hour. And when he went above that, actually he lost his ability to turn the ball at such prodigious angles. So firstly, it might not be that you need to bowl quite as quickly as some of the people that you see on telly, because you might lose that absolute gift that you have, which is the break off of a wicket, which comes from the revolutions that you put on because of that, as Terry Jenner used to call it, the gift of a wrist that you've either got or you haven't. So, you know, bear that in mind. Don't look to try and bowl like everybody else does on telly. Find your pace to get that maximum break out of the wicket whilst being effective through the air as well, so people aren't just catching you on the full toss or sitting on the back foot against you. So that would be the first bit of advice that I'd give any spinner, to be brutally honest. The second one about gathering extra pace and building natural pace. Yes, Pilates is really good and really important and can be very beneficial in how we transfer momentum, which is part and parcel of bowling leg spin. But also, we talked about it the other week, the use of a front arm and getting that front arm to pull down in a nice straight line, not like a Brett Lee fast bowler, and pull your palm into your leg, and that brings your body weight forward. Now, most floaty leg spin bowlers, or spin bowlers in general, that bowl very floaty and the ball stays up in the air a lot of the time, they tend to bowl with their weight off their back leg more so than off their front leg. And that front arm motion of getting it nice and long and driving that front arm into your thigh will help you to get your body weight up and over your front leg. And that will give you more natural pace because you'll have more body weight going through the delivery to add to that gift of a leg spin wrist that you've got. So that would be the first bit. Allied to that is having the ability to push off of your back leg when you transfer your weight from back leg to front leg. It's something that we look to try and develop. So if somebody's bending their back leg a lot when they're landing on their back leg, and it often means that they're going to waste that energy and they're not going to be able to get themselves over their front leg. But the front arm is the first point of call. And then secondly, have a look at how you can use the back leg to push yourself forward onto your front leg. And that will give you the natural pace and probably mean that your shoulders will go vertical rather than horizontal. By that, I mean they'll go up and over your right. If you're a right arm bowler, which it sounds like you are, that your right arm, right shoulder will go up and over rather than coming around the houses in a horizontal fashion, and that will also help with your pace production as well. So there's three things, and I'm sure that the first one will probably help you out, and if not, try the second, and if not, try the third.
Is the pace of the bowl tied into how much drift and dip the bowler is getting, or is that all to do with the revolutions?
It's mostly to do with revolutions, and I'm sure there is it does contribute in some way, shape or form, but it's revolutions that give you that drift and that dip, and you know, the revolutions also angle of the seam as well does help with that, but particularly dip is revolutions on the cricket ball.
Okay, so it's not something to obsess about, really, was the question behind the question there.
Yeah, no, absolutely, mate. You know, pace is very natural, and we've talked about naturalness in our yes no, and it's exactly the same here. And you know, if you can maintain your maximum break, you know, if you can do that at 48 miles an hour, then do so. But by getting your weight over your front leg, by using that strong long front arm, will help that happen. We'll get a more appropriate trajectory, so people will find it easy or less easy to walk down the wicket and hit it on the full toss or on the half volley, because the shape of the ball will prevent that a little bit. And that was one of Warne's assets, but it's also one of the assets for somebody like Graham Swann, who's bowling finger spin, is that he's very difficult to come down the wicket to because his pace is appropriate. He's still getting lots of revolutions on the ball, which makes the ball dip and drift. And also he's getting that break off of the wicket because, you know, he's got his pace is perfect, really.
I would add, from a strength and conditioning point of view as well, there's absolutely no harm in getting stronger, whether that has a direct influence on your pace or not. I mean, getting stronger is always going to be helpful for a spin bowler, because it helps keep injury away, not necessarily getting bigger muscles, but just getting stronger muscles. As Steph Jones says in his online training program, it's all about getting as strong as you can get within your own body weight. So it's not a matter of getting bigger. It's a matter of getting stronger. And if you can do that, then that will help with the pace, and it will also help with staying on the park. So you can't really go wrong by getting stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gives you stability, and that stability enables you to transfer your momentum. And for spinners, it's about transferring momentum from the ground all the way up into the wrist or the fingers, which then imparts the spin, isn't it? And the more stable you are, the more effective you are at transferring your momentum from ground all the way up through the kinetic chain into the ball.
Yes, I would add mobile to that as well. The more you can rotate around the correct joints, then the better force you can produce, and you can put that into revolutions on the ball or pace on the ball.
No, definitely, mate. You're absolutely spot on.
It's soapbox time, and Gareth has got something to say. He's got 60 seconds to say it, and that's it. So, Mark Garraway, over to you for this week's soapbox.
I'm going to apologise in advance, because I might have spoken about this before, but it's something that really gets my goat, to be honest with you, which is what the soapbox is all about, and it's the word don't. As soon as we say the word don't, we are embedding whatever we're saying don't do into somebody's mind. And, you know, I listen to coaching all the time, and I love listening to coaching because I love to learn from people, but also from their mistakes as well as their good things. And I watch people talking about don't do this, don't do that, instead of actually saying what they want you to do. So always, if you can, talk to players about what you're expecting from them and what you want them to do, rather than what you don't want them to do. And that makes a huge difference in their ability to take on a positive message and work towards a goal, rather than working away from one. And we know that if you're working towards a goal, or you've got a clear picture in your head, then you're more likely to achieve it on a regular basis and get good performance results.
Okay, that's the end of the show for this week. A couple of things that we need to do before we go. The first of which is to decide on a winner for the competition for this week's prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Raghav's question about outfields and diving, and Dean's question about leg spinning pace. Which one did you prefer this week, Gerrard?
I'm going to go Ragab's question about fielding, because we don't have enough fielding questions, I don't reckon. So there's a bit of a challenge to all of our listeners to see if they can come up with a fielding question as opposed to both of us, Dave. So I'm going to go with that one. I thought it was good, and I think there's some options there for anybody, irrespective of their outfields, to develop some divers in their team.
Yeah, well, congratulations, Ragav. We do like the fielding questions, that's true. And yeah, we don't get enough of them. We get many batting questions, and fielding questions are probably bottom of the pile. So yeah, good point, Gareth, and well done, Ragav. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch and send in their question, Berners, what would they need to do?
Give us a call, the number 020-88-167-691. Or drop us a mail, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
If you send in your question and you don't get onto the show, then feel free to send it in again. We can't get round to them all. But if you do send in your question again, try rewording it, because maybe we didn't get on the show because it didn't have the wording that we were after. But keep sending in your questions, because you do have a chance to win a prize. And even if you don't win the prize, you still get your question answered. Our Twitter, if you want to send in a question that way, is @PB Cricket Coach, and you can find us on Facebook if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You can subscribe to the show by going to iTunes and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. There's a subscribe button in there, and you know what to do. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link in the green bar at the top, and you've got all the instructions for how to subscribe using any other RSS reader or device. So that's all for this week. Until next time, when hopefully I'll be back to firing on all cylinders. That's all for this week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, coach.